Hello, this is Yarrow, and welcome to Vested Capital, episode number 33, featuring my guest, Michelle Tasco, who is a financial coach who works one-to-one with clients. She's based in LA and has a very long career. In fact, so long, I actually met Michelle, well, virtually anyway, way back in around 2008, 2009, when she took my blog mastermind course, the 1.0 version. This is the first course I ever created. It was a written course back then before video courses were common. And she took it, and then I don't know, every 2 or 3 years, she'd show up on one of my group coaching calls for that program. And we talk a little bit about how her coaching business is going, possibly her transitioning, or at least adding to what she offered to maybe do some group programs or some digital courses, something like that. But all that time, her one-on-one coaching business has been growing. So she continued to focus on that to the point today where she's made $1.2 million in the last 3 years and is on track now to make $500,000 plus per year from her one-to-one financial advice coaching business. That's impressive because one-to-one is one-to-one. That means it's just the coach and the client working together, usually for an hour. So to get the kind of numbers like $500,000 a year in revenue, you need to, well, you think you need to work incredible hours because you do the math. How many one-hour sessions do you have to do to reach that kind of income? But also you have to charge more. And we're gonna hear the entire pricing journey that Michelle has gone on from being a person who charged nothing, did free coaching, to getting her first client who was spending about $25 a session, then $50 a session, $100 a session, and then many, many years later, now charging as much as $700 a session. As you can imagine, your client type changes, your client persona changes. To get someone who's paying $50 versus $700 for a session, it's a different person. But Michelle, typical financial advice fashion, tracks everything and has a wonderful history of how much money she made each year in this 15-year-long coaching career she's had now. So you'll see the progression. I ask her about how she increased her prices and, you know, what type of client she gets today that can justify spending $700 on a coaching session. I also ask her how to break down her discovery call formula, basically how she does these free sessions, or not really a session, a free short call just to meet a potential client and then bring them over to the point where they're signing up for usually a package of maybe 4, 5, 6, not called a package, she doesn't call it a package, but that's usually what it takes to get people financially back sorted out with her coaching. So I really love this interview just to hear the long, steady growth. And I really do mean long. We're talking 8,000 in year one, 12,000 in year two, many, many years before it reached six figures. And then in the last few years, over $500,000 a year. So what a progression. I also really appreciate Michelle just breaking down a lot of the basics along the way, how she got into coaching, how she got free clients, how she gets clients today, what marketing methods work, and that whole breakdown of her discovery call process at the end will be super useful for anyone else who is looking to do one-on-one coaching and needs a process to take people through on those discovery calls you might be doing with your own potential clients. Okay, I'll press play on that interview in a second. Just a reminder though, if you have not yet subscribed to this podcast, to search for Vested Capital on any of the podcast players and make sure you hit that subscribe button. It's also on YouTube, so you can go look for my name, Yarrow, Y-A-R-O, or Vested Capital, and you'll find the video version of these podcasts published there, and you can subscribe on YouTube as well. And one little extra plug for today's episode, I've been working on some software behind the scenes and I'm not ready to release it yet. However, it is very much about supporting the coaching community. And because of that, I want to give anyone who's listening in right now, because this is a very coaching oriented interview, if that's something you're doing or planning on doing, if you're at all interested in being a one-on-one coach or maybe a small group coach, no matter what topic you cover, head to candid.is. Candid, the word candid, candid.is. You'll find an early notification email list there. Just enter your email. You'll go onto my notification list there. And as soon as the software is ready, and it will be 100% free for you to use, you'll be able to make use of it. And hopefully I'll be able to help you with this tool with your coaching business. And I suspect it'll be sometime this year, 2022, where I'll be able to send you the link to start using that. In fact, I'm gonna be using it myself. I'm gonna be the first client. But for now, let's learn about how you can run a massive, successful one-on-one coaching business with Michelle Tasco. Okay, Michelle, thank you so much for joining me. I feel like this is an interview that's been very much in waiting. We've wanted to do this for, I don't know, maybe a decade or at least 5 years. It feels like I might have asked you 5 years ago to do this conversation. So I am super excited to finally get to have this interview, in particular because you do something that I think is actually quite rare. You do a lot of private one-on-one coaching. And the rare part is how much money you've made from it, as we were just talking about off air, $1.2 million in the last, was it 2 years of coaching last or 3 years of coaching? And
yeah.
3 years of coaching. And you've hit the $500,000 a year run rate with a one-on-one coaching business, which I know if I was to hear that, I'd be like, oh my God, is she spending like 12 hours a day doing coaching calls? Because that to get that kind of number. So I'm sure we're all curious how you can get to that point. But before we talk about the coaching business, I'd love to dive into that story when you reach that point in your life story. As I always do with this podcast, I want to go back in time first, learn about Michelle before Michelle became Michelle the coach. Let's go back. Where were you born and raised?
Oddly enough, because I'm Filipino, but I was born in a little town called Gambu, and this is in Nigeria, which is in Africa. So probably not expecting that, but that's where my parents met.
Okay, I did not know that. And so how much time did you spend there?
I was there until I was 5 years old. And they really wanted to send to go to the U.S. because they had family there. And it was so funny because I remember being in school and doing a book report. And my dad said, well, America at that time, we saw it as the land of green pastures and Elvis and the land of opportunity. And so they did whatever they could to get here.
Do you have any memories of your time in Nigeria?
Yes, we had pigs and chickens in our front yard. We also had my mom drove a VW bug. My dad had a station wagon, you know, with the wood paneling on the side. And I had a nanny, and Sesame Street was in French. So that was something different too.
Good memories. Okay, so then you went to the States next. Is that what happened after?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay, so was that, I'm guessing, at 5 years old, it's probably not a big change to your life. You probably didn't even realize at the time. So, because you were just about to start school, I'm guessing, about then?
Yeah. Kindergarten. So I was about to start kindergarten. But you know, it was wild as we went through New York first, and that was where I first saw snow. So imagine, you know, the kind of weather in Africa and then the snow experience. And then from there to Orange County, Los Angeles, Orange County, that area.
That's amazing. Okay. So we'll take us forward. So you start growing up in LA, and did you spend the rest of your like childhood and teenage years there?
Yeah, so I grew up in Anaheim, which was, you know, next to the happiest place on earth, and that's where I went to school. I'll say from high school, I graduated and I got accepted to USC, and so that's where I did my undergrad, and just my first introduction to business school, to a bigger city, to what could be possible. So it was really exciting at that time, thinking about, well, what could I do in the world now that I'm in college and who will I end up becoming?
What did you enter college studying?
Business.
Okay. Was there a plan? Like, did you think I would join another company, start your own?
No, I was just really open to working for someone else. I honestly didn't really have any thoughts. I knew that I wanted to be successful. I knew that from just when I was in high school, because I was that straight A student and I was in all the clubs and things like that. So I was really just open to experiencing, you know, what could be possible in a major city. And out of college, I ended up being an assistant to the president of Guess Clothing for some time, a celebrity photographer, a celebrity interior designer, a gentleman who had 14 multifamily complexes across the country, as well as two hotels and a storage unit in New York. And, you know, he would fly on jets, and it just opened my eyes to, I'll say, entrepreneurship, because he built his own business from scratch. And just kind of feeling out what it was that I would be interested in.
Okay. I'm curious, what was your definition of success at that time? Because you said you knew you wanted to be successful. What did you think that was?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, at that time, I think I was definitely money motivated, and I wanted to be able to, drive the kind of car that I wanted to drive, live in a certain place that I wanted to live, and just have freedom of time and money.
Okay. And growing up in LA, obviously there's a certain type of lifestyle that people project and live in LA,
Sure.
obviously. So you get exposed to a lot of luxury. It's hard, I can imagine, especially around that age when you're in college and after, not to, want the nice car, the nice clothing, the nice apartment, whatever it might be. And in your situation, you were exposed to even more than that. You were exposed to private jets, or at least someone who was living a much wealthier lifestyle. Did this lead to any changes in your decision? Like, what did you see your future at that time?
Yeah, so I mean, thinking, gosh, going way back and thinking about how I grew up, it was really humble, right? So I had hand-me-down clothes. I think I drove like a Honda Accord at the time. And my parents, were middle class. They were hardworking and middle class. And I was just so very grateful for them. I think for me, though, I think just that exposure helped me to realize that there was more and there was more possible. And I think that deep within, I just felt within that I was meant for more. And I think transparently, it's very easy to get swept up in a big city and to be introduced to the wrong people. And so unfortunately, out of college, I ended up with four credit cards in collections. My car was repossessed. And what I had thought in my head, I wasn't living out at all. And so I share that because that shifted my trajectory entirely. And although everything, looked great on the resume, I was crumbling inside. And that's really where I dove into personal development and also found coaching. And I can honestly say that coaching really saved my life because it gave me a different perspective. It helped me to realize, that think differently, that people think differently, that people are designed differently in terms of their personality types. And I think that on a ground level, we all want to feel special and important in a certain way. And by taking the time to look within, you really get to discover yourself through that process. And that's what coaching did for me.
Okay, well, I'd love to talk more about coaching, but before we do that, how did you get into that kind of debt? Like, I mean, we all know what a credit card is. I know some people, especially when they're young, they first get a credit card and they kind of don't connect the dots that this is something they have to pay back. It's like, oh, this is free money. What's your story around that? How did you, I mean, four credit cards is a lot. So how did this happen?
Yeah, well, I think that it's easy to get a credit card first, right? And then it's easy to spend money on the credit card. And it's easy to figure out, okay, I can at least pay the minimum payment. But when you do that for some time and then you get these other offers of here's another credit card, and then someone tells you, oh, you can just do a balance transfer so you're not paying interest. I think one multiplies to two, to three, to four. And I think at that time it was $68,000 of credit card debt. And if I were to go back in time, I think that going from not having much to then having access to more because you could leverage credit, I think I fell into that trap, not knowing that that was a trap. And so it was easy to eat out a lot. And that's a huge culprit for most. It was easy to go shopping a lot. It was easy to do personal care like hair and nails and things like that a lot. It was easy to treat friends out, for things. And so I think before you know it, something that was such a tiny snowball really turned into this avalanche of debt, right, over time. And that's what happened to me, which is, true for a lot of people in the
Okay,
US.
so Yeah, you're probably describing a scenario a lot of people are still in right now. For you, what was the catalyst? Was it the car being repossessed that finally made you go, I need to solve this problem and take it seriously, or was it something else?
Yeah, when all of that kind of hit a wall, it really affected me emotionally. And so I remember having to move back home, and I remember just checking out for some time because of the weight. There's actually a lot more to the story. I won't go into that at this time unless we want to go deeper. But I'll just say that that introspection and that I'll say place of checking out and just decompressing, after a while you realize if no one else is gonna dig myself out of this hole, like I have to do this. No one else is gonna do this for me. And I think at that time that's when I got introduced to personal development, and I went to a few different seminars. And just the idea of learning about yourself instead of learning about other people in school. I think in school we learn about so many different people in history. But there's not necessarily a class where you're learning about, well, how do I function? What is success really to me? What makes me happy? What do I want to do? How do I learn best? And so diving into that, that I would say was the catalyst. And more so by not keeping it in my head, but actually journaling it. And I'm actually on journal. I just finished journal number 37, just looking at this one that I just finished last night. And so
Wow.
I'm on journal number 38 since 2005. I can still remember opening up an empty book and just writing out and brain dumping all of the emotions, all of the things that were tangled in my mind, and then literally writing. I'm just going to close my eyes. I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm going to count to 100. And I honestly had this spiritual experience where I just had the spiritual experience of from now moving forward, I'm going to learn to be the person I'm meant to be in the world. So that's actually what happened.
Okay, so a lot of internal work to get to the point where you could start making those practical changes around debt. Do you remember, in terms of personal development courses, workshops, books, whatever you feel you want to mention that had the big impact on you
Sure.
back then?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the time, I was attending events hosted by a lady by the name of Dani Johnson. She had a seminar called First Steps to Success, and I went to several of her of those. And then she had a second level called Creating a Dynasty. From there, I read How to Win Friends and Influence People. I le read Think and Grow Rich. I watched The Secret. I watched What the Bleep. I also read The Power of Now, The Alchemist, and
I think you're
oh
describing my
goodness, there was
20s
one more.
right there,
Yeah.
Michelle.
That I was in my 20s when this all
Yeah.
happened. Yeah.
Okay, great, great list. Still a great list of resources there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a lot of self-work, maybe a spiritual breakthrough, journaling, a lot of study. How does that then become the actual change that gets you out of debt?
Yeah. Well, I started coaching. I read this book, and I recommend it to every coach out there whenever someone asks me how, I started coaching. And it's Leadership Coaching: The Skills, Discipline, and Heart of a Christian Coach. And the reason why that book made such a difference for me is because it really helped me understand the difference between coaching, mentoring, and counseling. And I caught that if a coach really asks the right questions, because if you're asking the right questions, you're going to get the right answers. So I could really be a great question asker. And I started off as a life coach to start with. I actually did coaching for free. I connected with five people that I knew and let them know that what I was up to, and I did free sessions. And then one of them, my girlfriend from college, funny enough, Aviva, she said, "You're helping me so much. Can I pay you?" And she said, you know, is $25 enough? And I thought that that was a miracle. I thought that was like so amazing because it came out of thin air. I didn't have a product, somebody else's product. I wasn't trading time for dollars as far as like working for a company. And it just gave me that glimmer of hope that I'm onto something.
Love it. I have to ask though, and I know everyone listening, not everyone, but some people listening will be like this. So you're in debt, and you know, I don't want to say everything was terrible, but it sounds like you weren't in the situation where you would have the self-confidence, the self-belief to think I can help others. You'd be like, I need to sort myself out. A lot of coaches, I think, or potential coaches have this, is like, how can I coach anyone? I'm still in debt. I haven't got money. I haven't got the things you might expect in a life. I can't go out there and charge money to speak to me because I don't have those things. I'm not an expert. I don't have the knowledge or the experience. Yet it sounds like you are a 20-something person in debt who's like, I'm going to become a life coach and help others. Like, there's almost like the sense of how is, you know, doesn't make sense. Did you have any kind of self-doubt there, or at that point you felt confident because of all the personal development you've been through?
I mean, it was years and years of personal development.
Okay.
I'd say it was 3 years until I started coaching. And during that time, I started a direct sales business where I made $40,000 inside of 6 months. And I was going to continue with that business, but then when I read the book that I shared, I mean, as cliche as it sounds, something woke up inside of me, and I realized I love people. And I love helping people, just my personality type. And let me see if this is something that could work. That's why I didn't charge for it at all, because I was already making money in a different company. But I didn't address my debt yet at that
Totally.
time.
Okay.
When I started coaching, something occurred where you realize, okay, I want to have a certain level of self-integrity because if I'm going to lead and guide somebody to get their life on track in whatever category, I want to be in line myself. And so it gave me, I'll say, the courage. It gave me the inspiration, and the accountability to do that for myself. And I actually remember being so scared calling these different creditors because by that time it was creditors calling. And I actually settled all of my credit card debt for $24,000. So it was like 38 cents on the dollar. And that was amazing because I was able to pay that off with the other amount of money that I was making with the other business. And then I just didn't look back. I just kept on going from there.
Okay. I could imagine, and I'd like to talk a bit more about recovering from debt, but I imagine, yes, that's great. You only pay 30 cents on the dollar, but you also must absolutely wreck your credit rating doing that. So you're not exactly solving 100% of the problem. You've gotten out of debt, but you've got this credit rating issue. And we can talk about that. But first, so you become a coach and you call it a life coach to begin with. So you did some free coaching, and it sounds like people in your social circle, you would have said, hey, I'm here to do coaching or help you. You can ask questions, like you said before, you're comfortable doing that. And the quality of the question is the quality of the coach or the, you know, getting the help. And then someone says they want to pay $25. So, okay, wow, this is potentially a business. How does that but then become, okay, I'm going to, and tell me when this happens in your timeline, but do you quit your other direct sales business and then say, that's it, I'm a coach, I'm going to try and get clients, or do you sort of juggle them both? Like, how does the transition happen?
I juggled them both. I juggled them both. Because at that time, I also had gotten married and I had my first baby. So add that to the mix of juggling several things, right? And so I worked the direct sales business for a certain time until coaching grew to a point where I knew that in my heart of hearts, I didn't have the interest or desire to build the other business. But I didn't stop one income stream to start at zero with another.
Okay, so
That would be my advice to most people.
I was going to say that is good advice for most people. There's a few people who love to burn their bridges and just go all in on something new, and they can do that. But sure. Yeah, I think it's often safer and smarter to have that backup, or at least have that stability in place. So I'm going to take us forward then. So how as a side project or a second business, how does the coaching start to take off?
It was slow. It was really slow. And but I think that for me, I needed time to build my confidence back up. And it was actually, I think, around that time, those first couple of years, where I found you. And because you spoke about this laptop lifestyle, and I thought, even just the idea of it, to be able to work anywhere in the world, just as long as you have internet access and a laptop, you know, and a phone line of some sort, I mean, that I was mesmerized by that idea. And for me, it took some time. I have my numbers somewhere, but I think like the first year I made like $8,000, but that was a lot in respect of doing something that I just ventured into. And the old me would have gone to coaching school and spent a whole lot of money. But I wanted to try it out first and see, you know, is this something that I could actually do.
Can we talk about that first year? Because I think that is the hardest part for a lot of people. They just don't know how to get their first client, their first 10, make their first $8,000, as the case may be. What did you do in that first year?
Yeah, a couple of things. So I coached for free, and that coaching for free led me to a few referrals. And
Michelle,
then
sorry to interrupt again one more time here, but yeah. Even when you say you coach for free, I know, like, as a person who's been coaching others, and often I say one of the first things to do is to coach for free for experience, for cementing what topic you want to help people with, for getting case studies, so many good reasons to do it. But a lot of people get stuck with that because they don't know what I do. Do I ask my friends and say, listen, I'm now a coach, do you want my help? Like, what did you do to find free coaching clients?
Yeah. So I was just honest and real. I said, look, I read this book and I think I'm supposed to be a coach. And I just said, I'd love to help you. Would you be open to doing 5 sessions with me? And I wouldn't charge you for anything. And if I can give you some kind of result out of this, would you mind writing a testimony for me? Because I learned early on through personal development, facts tell, but stories sell. And I can say for the first 5 years, I use those testimonials for myself just to build my own confidence. Whenever I felt like, okay, what am I doing? Am I even like helping people? I would read my testimonials over and over and over again, because it was proof. It was proof of what I was able to help others with. And so I highly recommend that. And I think that, you know, when you give something your all and genuinely come from a heart place, it's not transactional. It's really about building a relationship. And I think that's super important, because it's such a disarming approach, because not everybody feels like they've got somebody 100% there for them, that won't judge them, that will hear them out, will ask them the right questions, and will stick it out with them and hold them accountable to their highest self. And I think that when you realize that that's something that you can do for somebody else, then you'll see how valuable that is for the person that you're actually helping, leaps and bounds. Just holding space for someone so that they can think is monumental. I've had some sessions where I barely said anything. I just held space so that they can sort certain things out, and I'll ask a few key questions so that it'll inspire them to, or ponder certain things. And that was the coaching session. And, you know, the reflection on that is that it didn't make coaching about me and how could I'm the best coach, and how I really made coaching about serving. And I think a lot of coaches forget that they're really about their methodology and what I'm going to train you on, instead of really listening, active listening skills.
Yeah, that's good advice. Did you have a topic at the time? Like, were you saying I'm a coach on this, or was it just like I'm a coach?
I'm a coach. I want to help you to succeed in whatever it is that you want to succeed in. I casted a wide net, because then it was really up to them to set the agenda, to figure out what it is that they wanted. And after a while, there was this theme, though, of finances. And I could be authentic and real enough to say, here's what happened with me, and here's how I'm turning it around. And then that niche, I think, organically came about.
Okay. So back from before I interrupted you, $8,000 in the first year. So we can see now how you got your free clients and how that was so important for building your self-esteem, getting your practice in, finding maybe the niche a little bit with finance. Everything starts to come from that. Then you start charging money. So how do you get to $8,000 in your first year?
I charged 25, and then I was so bold to charge 50 a session. Isn't that funny? And with that, it was just the consistency. You know, I never did packages. I just kept going with the client and delivered as much value as I could that they kept wanting to coach with me. So I've had several clients where I was helping them in such a way that then I ended up coaching their mom, and then I ended up coaching their dad. I had another client where I ended up coaching her sister, then I ended up coaching the other sister, because they're your biggest advocates and walking billboards of the experience. They can't stop talking about it. And so I think that's how that grew organically. And then I remember realizing, okay, I need to be online somehow. And I'm very high touch, not as high tech. I was talking to someone about being online, and she guided me to this online directory. And I still believe it is the largest international directory for coaches, called noomi.com, NOOMII.com. And I'm still listed on there to date. And when I went on there, it was like, wow, there's this world of other coaches that I could, you know, keep get in touch with. And with some boldness, I reached out to a few. And then I connected with a marketing coach who wasn't doing well financially. And I was doing well financially, you know, to a degree, at least being able to connect the dots. But I didn't know marketing. So we traded. And so she actually set up my LinkedIn, which I didn't know what that was at the time. She set up a Yelp page, and she set up my Google My Business. And that was well over 13 years ago. And then at that time, with the concept of facts tell, stories sell, I gathered as many of my clients and asked them if they would post their testimonials for me on those platforms.
Yeah, nice. It's funny to think 13 years ago, and that's probably around the time you came across my work, because it sounds like that's when you started looking into the online part of this. That's a long time ago. I mean, that my first version of my first course came out around probably about then, maybe 15 years ago, so slightly after that. Different time, obviously, but still similar marketing things can work. Well, two questions. One, let's close the loop on, because did you take my Blog Mastermind 1.0 course? Is that what you first studied? Oh, wow.
I did. Okay, it was 1.0. Yeah.
So, was that part of, like, I mean, I know you and we've talked, I feel like every 3 or 4 years, I sort of get an update on what's going on with Michelle, and it's always better, but it's always kind of more and more of one-on-one coaching. Which can be quite laptop lifestyle. You can certainly do it anywhere, but I mean, it sounds like a lot of your coaching was face-to-face to start with in real life, not like we're doing now.
No, actually, all of it was online. All of it was over the phone. Yeah, from day one.
Mm-hmm. Before Zoom even existed.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did have essentially a laptop lifestyle business, a little bit personal in the sense you had to always show up for something, and that's often what people get a little frustrated with, but let's not talk about that yet. So going back then, you set up all your basic marketing, important discovery things, your testimonials. Was the plan maybe to start writing as a way to get clients, and that's why you're interested in blogging at the time? Because I'm trying to think, everything you've said so far about getting clients has pretty much been through referrals, right? Your current clients bringing in new clients, but that can only go so far, I'm guessing, with your friendship circle. At some point, you might need to find a few new people. So what was the kind of rollout of your marketing?
So it's so funny. Yes, I had the idea, okay, well, I need to start blogging because that's at that time, that's what everyone was doing. I just, I'll say that I wasn't so great at it. I did my best. And you know what is wild that actually happened is because I look back and I think about it now and I realize that in order for the right people to find you, you do need to be searchable. And yes, searchable with blogging, but then I also realize, what are those search engines that are out there where someone has an urgent need, they're hopping online to find someone to work with, they're looking for a person to work with, not researching an answer. And so that's really where I think everything shifted for me, because then I started expanding Yelp, and I started also paying for some advertising on Yelp. And then I had some constant lead flow through that. And then I did have some articles on my website, and then I found somebody that could do SEO for me out of the Philippines. And then that helped me with location, because something that I learned when I was working with the founder of Numi is that when people are looking to work with somebody, they're looking for somebody nearby. So location, geographic location is super important. And that being said, I knew that Yelp was a huge search engine in Los Angeles, and I needed to appear as a number one financial coach on that platform. So
globally or just locally?
Just locally in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Later, I expanded territory to different major cities in the US, but Los Angeles was the hub.
Okay, so Yelp ads, Yelp organic search, just going after that. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, was it like get out of debt coach, financial coach?
Financial coach.
Or was it just life coach?
Still? Yeah, financial coach.
That was sort of...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So you decided to really go after that in LA. And how did it go?
It went well. Like right now, if you Google financial coach Los Angeles, I typically show up 4 times on the first page. So
4 times?
Yeah.
Okay, that's domination. Nice.
Yes.
So did that immediately, like, and maybe to go back to your story here, was that part of getting to 8,000 or was that after you were already at 8,000 in that first year?
That was after, yeah. That was after 8,000. I was okay. Able.
So to get to 8,000 was.
Yeah. So 8,000 really was warm market referrals. And then I was able to get a few new clients through the Numi platform, because they're also, it's a lead source for coaches as well.
Okay. How much did you do in year two?
Actually, I have my numbers just because I'm a financial coach.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, let's do it.
So if you want to go over them really quick, revenue year
I'd love
by
to.
Year.
I mean, we don't have to go through every year, but
yeah,
we can get an overview because it is a lot of years.
It is a lot of years. So just a little over 8,000 in 2010, about 12 in 2011, a little over 15 in 2012. So this is slow, right? And mind you, I had my son, and then 2 years later, I had another son, right? So this is me, stay-at-home mom. Then after that, a little over 20, and then closer to 30, 50. By 2016, I was at 80, and then 17 is when I had my daughter, and I hit over 6 figures. I did 116. And then from there... 2018, it was 184. And then in 2019, 284, 2020, 367, 21 was 530, and 22, I'm on track to do 550 this year.
Wow. Thanks for the breakdown. That is
Yeah.
so compelling. I have so many questions about this. First of all, let's
an
just flat
open
out
book.
say, yeah, congratulations for consistency. Because that is not a like you got rich in a year or two story. That
No.
is, you just kept doing it. You kept improving. Your numbers kept going up, and obviously, you're still hitting new numbers and big numbers now. The questions that come to mind are two, and maybe we can cover both, and two
Sure.
sides of this. One is the actual delivery of coaching, because the numbers go up, the clients go up, you get busy. But then there's the other side of it, which is how you get to that many clients. So let's maybe start with the first part of that. So,
Yeah.
correct me if I'm wrong, but throughout those years, you're raising prices at the same time. So
Absolutely.
you're getting more clients, but you're also increasing prices. What is your day like? Do you have 10-hour days, or is it one client a day? Where does it fit in all that? And
Yeah.
maybe through the progression, like over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. So, funny enough, I remember having my first 5 clients, and I'm thinking, how am I ever going to get to 10, right? 10 clients that I'm working with. And then I can recall, like, remembering, okay, how am I going to hit 5,000 for the month? And then how can I hit 5,000 in a week? And how can I do 45,000 in this year? And now how can I do 45,000 in a month? My rates went obviously from zero. I charge 700 a session now, per session. And last year I did 1,087 sessions, and my average was around 550. And I'm tracking the same. Usually once I've gone into rhythm, I could, because I track my numbers so well, I'm usually doing what I did the year prior by the 3rd month of September, because I'm pacing at a certain rate. And because I'm raising rates, I can still handle the same number of clients, so that I'm not like working from sundown to sun up, if that makes sense. And every time I raise my rates, I feel like, oh my God, am I really doing this? But you just, I think, grow into that number, and then that just becomes your number. And then you just grow a little bit bigger, and then a little bit bigger. And I think for me, doing it that way helped me to have ownership in the value that I was bringing. And then just that little bit more didn't seem like such a big leap. And it also helped me, as I was progressing, continue to fine-tune coaching so that it just became so much more streamlined and strategic. And in the very beginning of coaching, you attract a certain kind of client. But as you grow and increase in your skill set, in your authority, in your posture, in your voice, right? I'll say you become more magnetic for other kinds of clients. Because the client that I have now, like, I just was hired by the number one police psychologist in the country. I never would have been able to coach her, year two, year three, because I didn't have the wealth of knowledge or the experience in the areas that she really needed specific coaching in. So I know that occurred.
Do you mind me asking?
Yeah.
I have so many questions here, but
Of course.
what does a police psychologist come to you asking for at a $700 an hour rate? Because that's, I mean, I want to ask you too, like you're just saying now, it's such a jump from 50 to 700, but you worked your way up to that.
Sure.
But obviously, the people who used to hire you, there's no way they probably can afford you. Now, maybe they can. Some of them probably gotten wealthy over the years, hopefully too, and maybe
Sure.
they could. But the new clients you attract, it's a different type of person who can afford $700. Like they're not in credit card debt because they don't have $700 to spend on coaching, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they've got a
Yeah.
lot of money coming in, a lot of money coming out. But who,
Yeah.
what is the client type for
Oh,
$700
that's so
coaching
good.
question?
Yeah. Yeah, because I just started this month. I'm starting 7 clients at that rate, right? So, it's a handful of things. I currently attract a lot of I'll say successful high income earning clients. But just because you make a lot of money doesn't necessarily mean that you know where it's all going and if it's efficiently being spent. And I'll have clients that make multiple six figures, but they have a lot of credit card debt still the same because lifestyle increases. And I think for me, I know that I'm called to the up and outers. If I were to class a certain kind of person, because they have a lot of things going for them, but they just don't have the strategy in how to function with their finances. So it's operating like a well-oiled machine. And their pace in life is one where they're in their own zone of genius in their career, but perhaps this other side of the brain where it comes to numbers, that's not their strong suit. So they do see the value of bringing somebody in to be able to organize their financial life, help them to shift from their money costing them money to their money making them money, to expand the possibility of real estate. I've had many clients who make lots of money, but they still don't own their first home because there's when you're on this runaway train and you're spending so much with kids in private school or certain vacations or spending that you just don't know where to even begin to sort things out. And it feels really heavy, both emotionally and time-wise, because when people get busy, then they don't really have a lot of time to sort this out, and they don't know how to figure it out.
So, what would be the most common phrase they come to you saying, I need help with? Is it, I need to get out of debt, despite the fact that I'm making a lot of money, I still find myself in debt? Or is there something else? I want to buy my first home or something like that.
The main thing that people say is that they want to get their finances on track, that they feel out of control, that if they know that they're on paper, they're successful in life, but this is the one area they just don't know how to get right because they were never shown how, which I agree because just like me, it was never taught around the dinner table. It's never taught in the classroom. I didn't learn it, even though I went to a prestigious private school and learned business. Personal finances wasn't really taught.
Wasn't in there. Okay. So without going too deep into what you actually talk about during one of your sessions,
Sure.
what do you talk about during one of your sessions to help these people
Sure.
do this?
So good. So, the first thing that I coach someone with, the first session is always goal setting. And the reason being is because there's two sides. In goal setting, there's I call it the financial life coach, the financial coaching side, which is I need to pay this debt off. I want my credit score to be at this. I need to buy this house. I want to get into real estate investing. I want to be able to make this much money. I want to be able to go on these types of vacations. So that's like the 2.0 version of life. That's the vision board, picture that they're creating. And then on the other side of that, from the life coaching side, I also work with them on, well, who do they have to be or who do they get to be really in order to be the person that can achieve that? And that is in three categories: being goals, mindset goals, and energy goals. And I say that because from all of personal development, and I love Jim Rohn, he's like the grandfather of personal development. And one quote that has always stood out that I share on every coaching call is, don't make it a goal to make $1 million just because of the money, but because of who you'll become. Who will you become? And that 2.0 version of yourself, because we're always leveling up when you realize it. We've leveled up in our careers. We're leveling up, with our possessions or whatnot and the places that we want to go and the kinds of foods that we want to eat. Why not just level up as well as a person that you're becoming? Because that's a person who will actually be able to achieve and accomplish the 2.0 life that they're looking for. And when you get that concept, in your down, then you realize, okay, now I can design the 3.0 life. Who's a 3.0 me? Now I can design the 4.0 life. Who's a 4.0 me? And you just continue to level up toward that. And I think that is how it happened for me as a coach. Okay, so I'm this 1.0 coach. Who's a 2.0 coach in me? And who's my 2.0 client? I get to be this 3.0 coach. Who's my 3.0 kind of client? Because never in a million years would I ever have thought that I would have a senator as a client that ran for president, celebrities as clients, professors at the college I went to as clients, you know, so that's how it occurred.
Okay, amazing. I appreciate the, I mean, I could ask you more and more questions about what do you do in a coaching session, but I want to cover other things first. If we have time, we can come back to it. But
yeah.
I kind of drifted away from the marketing.
Can I
side.
Interject you with this?
You can,
Yaro,
go
because
for
I just want to, I always start with goal setting, but then comes the mechanics. Because really it's three parts. Most people with financial coaching, they lack visibility, they lack strategy, and they lack leadership in what to do. And so I break the sessions down in such a way where we're going over numbers, actuals for the last 90 days, because most people don't even remember what they ate yesterday. And then we're looking at a snapshot of all the money that came in reality and where it went out. And then I fit in all of the yearly amounts, because those are the things that we don't think about. Those are the things that get on a credit card, right? And then we build a budget based off of that. And I mean, this is so big picture, but then after that, then we do strategy. We'll strategize to pay off debt. We'll strategize to buy a house. We'll strategize to get into, you know, real estate investing. And then the last session is typically implementation. So that's just in a nutshell. That
nice.
Helps.
And I appreciate the overview. That's much helpful, very helpful. It is amazing that those topics are very similar to what I would expect someone who doesn't have a lot of money yet, who isn't earning, you know, like isn't a senator, isn't running for president. Everyone kind of is thinking that's my problem. But then I wouldn't think a person who can spend $700 in a coaching session is also still asking those questions. In my mind, if you're earning multiple six figures a year, you know, that's probably the minimum to say $700 is okay for a coaching session. You think, well, of course you've got enough money to buy a house because you're keeping all this money from all the money you make, and you should already have your debt paid off because you're making so much money. But you realize these are problems no matter at what level income you're at. It is a challenge, especially if you're not wired, like you said, to do something as simple as how much money do you spend on food each month and how much money you're spending. This is itemizing everything and seeing where it's going and then moving something from there to pay off something else. So, but that's an important distinction to make. You can teach exactly what you teach now to a higher caliber clientele because they have the same problems. You just have to believe you can help them and you have to believe you can charge more. So I love all that. You're walking proof of all this. You're walking proof of the evolution to go through all that from your starting point at 25 an hour to now 700 an hour. But what I wanted to know, this kind of connects to, well, two parts of this. Doing $700 coaching sessions, we touched on it before. How many hours are you doing per week or per month in coaching?
Yeah. So I typically do anywhere between 18 to 23 sessions a week.
Okay. So it's still very much a part-time job for you in terms of labor. Yep.
Yeah. Because I'm still a mom of three kids.
Yeah. That's the other job.
I still have, you know, my husband and I, we flip houses as well. So yeah.
Okay. And then continuing at the line of questioning before, I said the marketing side of this. I feel like marketing at a higher price point might need to change. Like, how do you convince a senator that you're the person to hire for financial advice? I can understand maybe case studies and social proof of your current and past clients helps tremendously. You kind of build up from, you know, you get a normal person, whatever normal means, to maybe the first CEO of a company, which helps you then get the first senator, which might help you get the first president, and then you get the first rock star or whatever it is. But that's a lot of leveling up. How did you progress in your marketing to reach the point where 700 is justified?
That's a good question. The best answer that I could give you is that someone, when they get on the phone with you, because I do all of the discovery calls myself, they have to think, know, and believe that they can trust you, that you can solve the problem and no one else can, and that they need to do this now, in fact, yesterday. As far as that, the rate, I have many clients that pay me that where I keep a card on file or they've Venmo or Zelle or whatnot. And then I have other clients, and this shifted for me during COVID because I really did want to help more people. is that I started doing payment plans with clients. And so when I opted to offer them a payment plan that fit inside of budget, a lot of the wall up or the question, well, I need the coaching, but I don't have the money to get the coaching to get my finances on track, that wasn't an issue anymore. And you know what's just so interesting is that even the clients that were on a payment plan, because of the way that I coach, we were able to shift things through the coaching so that a good number of them would address their debt and then say, okay, I just want to pay off the balance with you now. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it is really about for me and in the marketing, because yes, there's the marketing online and in what people read, but you're also marketing yourself when you're talking with them by the first hello, by the tone of your voice, by the welcoming their first experience with you, with interaction, with setting the first appointment. If you operate from such a place where you've got so much certainty, that you have this, well thought out streamlined process that they fit perfectly into, and you take the pressure off of them, I think that leaves somebody saying, okay, there's nothing in the way of me saying no now. And it's just a matter of trusting themselves to trust you to take that first step. That's how I look at least in the psychology of the way that I build my business.
That makes sense. You're talking about, I guess, the sales side of it where you're selling on the call. That doesn't sound as it's really just building a relationship, right? And then dealing with all their rejection points. But before that, they have to discover you, make the choice to book a discovery call. Today, does that happen from searching still and, you know, finding Yelp or... Obviously, there's a lot of word of mouth where your current clients are recommending you. Is there anything new and different you've done recently to bring in new clients, or is that still the same basic structure?
It's still the same.
Wow.
Yeah, it's still the same, and it's really quite wild. And I think over time, because of being able to be searchable, and I tell all certain people that have hired me to help them with their coaching business. And I said to them, if I wanted to find somebody like you that to solve that particular problem, how can I even find you? And if they're not able to be found through, you know, online, then that is an area that I want them to get strong at. I get a trickle of leads every day, and it's just about being able to convert those leads. So knowing your numbers too, because if let's just say in a month, you know, someone gets 10 leads, but they're only able to close one of them, then they're working much more harder than somebody that gets the same 10 leads and can close like six of them, right? That first person would need to have 60 leads to come in just to get the same number of new clients as the person that had the 10 leads, but with the higher conversion. So for me, I think just by necessity, I also had to get really good with being able to convert the number of people that, you know, were coming my way and not wasting it, really.
That is possibly the most common question, or leads me to the most common question I get from people who are about to do their first discovery call. So they decided to do some coaching. And I'm asking you this on behalf of them very much, as well as everyone listening in here. What is a discovery call for you, and how do you use that? Because I don't, maybe you tell us how long a discovery call is, because a lot of my students come and say, okay, I booked my first 15-minute discovery call or something like that. How do I bridge the gap from them booking this free 15 minutes to them paying me with only 15 minutes to actually make that conversion, that sale, as you're saying, which clearly you've gotten better at over time?
Yeah. So my answer to you is typically I say it's a 20-minute call, but I always leave room for 30. And there are some times that I'll go all the way up to an hour. I'm not coaching that person. But if I could say, here's the platform or here's the methodology, because I'm an open book here, and I think that this would help a lot of people. The first thing I say when I pick the phone up is, what can I do for you? Because then I'm coming from a place of service. And then as a friend, because I want things to be conversational, I'll say, catch me up. Where are things at right now? And because people need to warm up in order to start opening up. And so then from there, once they've unloaded everything on their mind, and I'm asking a few questions at the time, then I will say, this is what I caught from you so far, because most people want to also feel like they've been heard. So I'll summarize what it is that they shared with me, and then I'll go deeper with question asking. I'll say, okay, I just want a little bit more detail around the landscape. So is it okay if I ask you a few more questions? Okay, so where are we at with credit card debt? I just go right for the jugular. Okay, where are we at with, do you own your home or are you renting? Do you work for yourself, or do you, have a W-2 income? Where are we at with taxes? Where are we at with your credit? I'm getting so granular with them because I'm so curious about everything that's working and not working, and then I give them my recommendation because I'm the expert. So I say, okay, awesome. Based on everything that you shared with me, it's just a couple of things. I always say it's just a couple of things because I want them to feel like, okay, it's only a couple of things. It's not like this huge, gigantic, problem that is weighing me down. I say it that way because then it feels like, okay, this is doable. And then I have a certain what would you say, like dialogue, I guess that's the word. And for most people, it's what I see in your situation, it's just a couple of things. We're lacking visibility and strategy to create the financial stability that you're really looking for. And so with my clients, I usually guide them through 5 steps, and it's goal setting, and I go into that, and it is crunching the numbers, creating a budget, the strategy of what it is that you're wanting to accomplish, and then implementation. And so then I'm getting their buy-in because I'm giving them, what most people say is that, I really like that you have a step-by-step plan, and it's laid out and it's simple. And then from there, then I say, most people at this point, I just go right into it. Most people at this point, they have a few questions. They want to know more of, like, what does it actually take to coach with me? And then I share with them, coaching sessions are typically 1 a week. Normally to start with, do a handful, most likely 5, and everything's confidential. I often do a flat rate, and this is the rate. And then for my clients that have a cash flow issue, I have some clients where that's not a problem, and I keep a credit card on file. And I have other clients, that are managing their cash flow, that will set up some type of payment plan that fits inside of budget. And then at that point, what I'm doing at that point is managing any of their objections, time, money, how often, is this something that can actually work for me? And is this something that is a timing of it right for myself? And then I just go right into asking them, how soon do they want to get their finances on track? Do you want to start this week, next week? That way it's an option close, an assumption option close of a yes. Is it, we're just going to do it here today, this week, or next week? And it's moving them into their answer by guiding them, if that makes sense.
I love that. Thank you so much, Michelle, for sharing that. I feel like I can now refer everyone to this interview. Just listen to the 5 minutes of Michelle saying what to do on a discovery call, and you've got, your own little plan there for your own, whatever it is you coach. It can be adapted to that. In the last sort of 5 minutes here, Michelle, it's obviously been a long journey. It's an amazing amount of money for a side amount of hours, like 20, 25 hours a week. A week. That is, I don't even know if you've imagined reaching that point when you first started this business. Maybe you did, because you were pretty ambitious. For those listening in who are thinking, well, okay, I want to follow Michelle's footsteps. Maybe I want to even do it a little faster than you, because, you know, 13 years is a long time to wait to get to half a million a year. Can I get there in 5 years? Can I get there in three or something like that? What would you advise them to do to really grow a fantastic, lucrative, you know, one-on-one coaching business?
Yeah, that's such a good question. One of my coaching clients, because she was working at a regular job, and the first phone call she had with me is, Michelle, I want to quit this job and I want to be a coach and I need help with my finances to get there. And it is, number one, be searchable online. So just like me, be on Yelp, be on Google My Business, and also be on Noomi and LinkedIn. With that being said, I think that what's also important is to have a website that is sort of like a brochure that doesn't give any information about rates or anything like that, but it really just touches upon the pain points of what it is that they're running into, and about you. I would, number two, so searchable. Number two is gather as many testimonials as you can. And if you get long testimonials, chop those up into smaller testimonials and sprinkle them. Because if you were to compare Coach A to Coach B, and Coach A has three testimonials and Coach B has 35, most people would have an impression that Coach B is more successful and would be more interested in going with Coach B. And then the fourth would be to know your numbers. Know your numbers in such a way that then you're tweaking, okay, if I just raise my rate here, or if I just had this many more sessions during the week that I could handle, if I could just offer something at this price point, I think that you'll go faster than I did. Because the client that I mentioned who left her job to be a coach, in 3 years, she hit she hit 84,000 in 3 years. As far as this year, she's going to do 84,000 in coaching. And it took me, oh my goodness, like 8 or 9 just to get there. So that's what I would say. Definitely be searchable, gather testimonials, and know your numbers in your coaching business so that you know what to tweak to keep creating more value and charging at the rate that you feel, you know, is worth that.
Yeah, that rate part, I imagine, is a real hiccup for a lot of people. Like, they're thinking, I can't justify $250 an hour for my time now. I haven't taken any clients yet. I have, you know, I'm $50 an hour or something like that. Do you think that, like, if you go back to, say, Michelle, right at the beginning, those first few years when you were charging around $50, would you advise her to start at $100 instead, or start at a higher price? Or do you think it's necessary to go through free and then very low cost as part of your evolution with pricing?
I think that if you're gun shy to charge, start with free. If you have a belief in yourself that what you are doing brings value, I would pick a number that you can resonate with. Because here's the thing, I've talked to other people where they've said a number to me, but I could tell just intuitively that they couldn't deliver at that price point. They didn't feel it was a number that they pulled out of the air that they were reaching for, but they couldn't stand behind it. And I don't know if it's just like women's intuition. I'm learning about that now, actually, but there is something about that. And for yourself, if you feel confident about, because you can feel it inside too, like, if you feel like, I can't charge that person this much money, not because of the value, but just because it doesn't feel right in you, then someone else will pick up that frequency. So to me, there's some coaching around, you know, self-coaching or personal coaching that you can dive into to get to that sticky point for yourself. And when you can work through that, I think that then you'll break your own barrier, because it is always about breaking your own glass ceiling above you, not anybody else's.
Yeah, I totally agree. You're right. It's almost like a resonance, a sense of I am worth this much because I can deliver this result to you. And you kind of intuitively know what that feels like and what, and you know, even how long you've been doing something or how much you've lived through or the experience you have, that really helps. So, Michelle, we'll wrap it up. We're over an hour. For people who are interested in learning about you, maybe even hiring you as a coach, where should they head to?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can go to my website, michelletasco.com. They can Google Financial Life Coach Los Angeles and find me, four times on that page. I'm actually in Vanity Fair, this issue. I have it here beside me, right here. It's the July August issue.
That's
So
awesome.
here
Congrats.
I am. And if you want to learn about making more money and just following other women entrepreneurs that have hit, that million mark and beyond, this book, The Science of Getting Rich for Women, and I've written a chapter in it myself, and so you can learn more about me there. And yeah, any of those methods, I'm able to be reached.
That's awesome. Thanks, Michelle. Is there anything else you would like to share with the audience before I stop our recording today?
Yeah, just honestly, in my heart of hearts, the world needs coaches because there are areas or categories of coaching that are just never going to be taught in school. And it's not even about there not being enough teachers, it's about people that have life experiences, people that have a passion, people that have a calling. And a message that they know that they're meant to impact others, to be able to live the life that they're meant to be living, have the career they're meant to be, working, having a most amazing marriage, being an amazing parent, being a successful entrepreneur. And I just say that there are people that need us. And if not now, then when? And if not you, then who? Because if you don't step up to the plate, someone else will. And you don't want to miss that and look back and say, oh my gosh, I never followed through or I never did that. And so I think that this is one of those like, can I believe in myself enough to go the distance? And, a wise person said to me, to be successful in business, you've got to stick around long enough to be successful in business. And it's not just are you, willing to put yourself out there, but are you willing to go all in and to go the extra mile and to I'll say succeed no matter how long it takes, no matter how long it takes, because Yaro, I know you're here to impart your own wisdom and knowledge to create community, to inspire others that yes, it is possible because you're living proof of it yourself. And so if we just all link arms together, I think that we really can transform the world in a
That's
beautiful
a
way.
great message, Michelle. And I think you and I are both examples of longevity your story, you went through all those years. It's not like, it's 8,000, it's 10,000 the next year, it's 12,000 the year after that. And I started blogging in 2005. This podcast started in 2005, and we're recording now in 22. So yeah, if you're enjoying what you're doing, and you can really make an impact on a lot of people, as you have done. So thank you for sharing the story. Keep up the great work. I look forward to seeing, what you do next. And of course, on the occasional coaching call that we talk through my programs, we always talk about you doing some kind of group program or some sort of self-study program. So hopefully one day we'll see that come out from you as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Yarrow. It's such a pleasure and honor to be
Thanks,
here as
Michelle.
a guest.
There you go, the interview with Michelle Tasco. I hope you enjoyed that. What a great story. I was really interested in everything Michelle was talking about. Getting to those kind of numbers with private coaching inspired me to get more back into private coaching myself. So I'm looking forward to possibly doing more in that space as well. It is a very satisfying thing to do, especially when you feel like you can help a lot of people with their next steps in whatever they're trying to do, solve a problem, grow something, change something about themselves, their life, their business, their relationship, whatever it could be. Before you go, if you have yet to subscribe to this podcast, please look for Vested Capital in your podcast player. Hit the subscribe button. And if you are doing that in the iTunes player, the Apple player, make sure you leave a review. I really, really would appreciate that. I don't have many reviews on Vested Capital, and it'll be great to get some new ones. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please leave that review. Also, subscribe on YouTube. Videos are coming there, not just this podcast, but my own show. I'm releasing both on basically the Yarrow YouTube channel. You can find that just by searching YouTube for Yarrow, Y-A-R-O, or Vested Capital. You find the podcast and you'll see Michelle's face and my face in a video interview. You can watch the episode if you want to catch a little bit more visuals with us, or if YouTube just happens to be your streaming audio video platform of choice, the show is available there. And I have some really cool solo episodes coming up, not really episodes of a podcast, they're more YouTube specific videos with some great footage that I've been taking and preparing with an editor for some pretty cool content coming up. So you have to subscribe on YouTube to get that. That's Yarrow, Y-A-R-O. You can find that on YouTube. And as I said at the beginning of this episode, if you are interested in possibly coaching, maybe you already are coaching, you're a one-on-one coach, I have a software tool coming out called Candid that is going to be very, very helpful for you to basically deliver those coaching sessions. There's a lot to it, and I don't want to reveal too much right now, but if you want to make sure you're first in line to get access to that, it's candid.is. Enter your email address at candid.is and you can join my early notification email list, and you'll be the first to find out when the beta version, the first version of the live app, will be available to you to use. That's candid.is. Okay, that's it for me. My name is Yarrow, and I look forward to talking to you on a future episode of my podcast. Bye-bye.